Welcome to the Dropping Dimes podcast. This is the 2 Cents Show. I'm your host, Rodrigo, but you can call me Rod. And I'm excited, nay, thrilled, nay, honored to have such an iconic personality on the show. Joining us today is running enthusiast, NBA fan, Raptors connoisseur, and host of the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Clipper bros and Beantown boys, K.E. Skeets. Thank you so much, Rod, for being on the show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that introduction. You checked all the boxes there. Thank you so much for having me on.
No, thank you so much. It is truly a pleasure to have you here. We have a great show where we're hoping to get to know you a little bit more, Skeets.
Sure.
Of course, we're going to talk some basketball now that the hiatus is happening at the NBA and across the world, really. And we also have a little Naismith Cup action, dropping dime style. We'll go head-to-head in the battle between Toronto and Vancouver. So lots to talk about, and started then.
Well, I feel like I should go put on a Raptors jersey. You're rocking the Vancouver Grizzlies sweater here. But yeah, we'll go head-to-head. I like that.
Sounds good. All right. So first, we want to get to know you a little bit more, Skeets. Obviously, in basketball terms, you guys have shared a lot of your life on the podcast. So I'm trying to steer into the basketball talk. So can you please tell me, you know, did you have a favorite player growing up, even maybe before the Raptors got into town?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say my three favorite non-Raptors players, let's call them that, of all time, are in no really particular order, but Nick Van Exel. I loved Nick Van Exel when I was a kid. I just thought he was so cool looking. He just was so sort of skinny and small, and he had the lefty, and he had the, you know, the flair for the dramatic. Hakeem Olajuwon. I loved Hakeem Olajuwon. You know, like most kids, I'm sure I loved Jordan and the Bulls, but I was an Hakeem Olajuwon guy, just, you know, especially at the big position. And then this is a no-brainer. Steve Nash is sort of like an idol of mine for a number of reasons, of course, being a Canadian and going on to the NBA and having so much success and just the way he played too. So those three guys, you know, Nick the Quick, the Dream, and then Steve Nash.
It's so interesting that, you know, especially Hakeem, I think, now that we sort of look back, we can really appreciate what he did, and not that he was underrated by any means, but you don't usually hear Hakeem being on a lot of people's top 10. Obviously, there's, you know, Magic, Bird, Jordan, LeBron, Kobe, Shaq, but Hakeem tends to be the underrated, really, really good superstar out there.
That's, I think, spot on. I think you're right, because it's not like he's underappreciated. I think when his name does come up, people are like, oh, yeah, Hakeem was amazing. You know, won titles, incredible numbers, you know, embarrassed David Robinson in the playoffs when David Robinson got the MVP. But he is sort of overlooked a little bit. It's a little Duncan-like, right? Where
exactly, yeah.
Tim Duncan is in sort of the same boat. Everybody appreciates the guy, knows how amazing it is. But yeah, when you make these top five, top 10 lists, they're regularly not brought up, which is wrong, really. I mean, they both are. If they're not top 10, I guess they're borderline top 10, and that's still pretty impressive.
Yeah, Hakeem did have that cool nickname, like the Dream, but Tim Duncan was always Timmy. They did have that flair, like Nick the Quick, right? Like, that's such a cool nickname.
It is. And like, I think a big part with Hakeem too is, unfortunately, held against him is like, oh, well, yeah, you won titles when Jordan was out of the league. And they would have carried a lot more weight if the Rockets would have took on MJ in a finals and somehow beaten them. Like, I think then that just catapults Hakeem to the next level. But obviously, we never got that.
Right. So you mentioned Steve Nash there, and for many reasons, but do you have an NBA player, you know, current or retired, whose style you most identify with?
In terms of like how they play the game?
How they play.
Yeah, I mean, Nash is honestly, like, first off, I get a lot of like, you look like a weird version of Steve Nash. I get a lot of that, sort of like an uglier version of Steve Nash. So there are similarities in our look, and I would like to pretend at least a little bit in how I play. I mean, I'm quick, I'm a point guard, I prefer a good pass over me trying to score. That said, I'm not a brutal shot, you know, like I'm definitely not Steve Nash levels, but I'm a little more streaky of a shooter, I'll be honest. But I think the idea of like playing basketball and looking at it like it's soccer, which I think was what Nash sort of did.
Yeah.
That's what I mean my sort of pickup game is like. So I guess it's Nash v. Nash.
I'm also vertically challenged, and I don't have a jumper, so generally I tend to go with Jason Kidd, also a point guard. But when it comes to, you know, slashing the paint and then throwing that outlet pass or that little flare, Steve Nash for sure. I mean, whether you're Canadian or not, I remember when I was still back in Mexico watching Steve Nash, and I was like, who is this guy? Where did he come from? And I just want to just emulate everything that he's doing. It was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, we don't, like, look, when you say Steve Nash, was he athletic? You sort of say no, because you're comparing him to Kobe's and MJ's and then giants like Shaq. But the truth is, I've always thought, like, Steve Nash is ridiculously athletic. Like, I mean, you know, especially out of the world population, because athleticism is not just jumping high. It's also like hand-eye coordination. And it's like, I think a little bit of seeing play steps ahead and just having a touch and things like that, balance.
Yeah.
He has that, it leaps and bounds. So he is, you know, he oddly is really super athletic to me. And I just, of course, love the way he played too.
It was so weird. Like, before I even got completely into the NBA, I got to see Steve Nash with the Mavericks with Dirk, and Finley still there. Because there was a Mexican player in the Mavs, Eduardo Nájera. And I went to, it was a preseason game. It was more of an exhibition, and they played for a good chunk of time. We were playing the Spurs with young Manu and all that. And I really enjoyed the game, but now, and I took a bunch of photos. But now looking back, I'm like, I wish I could relive that moment.
Right.
Because I would appreciate it a lot more now versus like, oh my God, all these very tall people doing very cool stuff. And I was just like, who's dunking it? But yeah, Steve Nash was someone that I think I would appreciate a lot more now.
Oh yeah. And you, I mean, you were fortunate enough to get basically sounds like a lot of legends playing in that game.
I know. Yeah. It's
pretty
crazy.
Amazing. Yeah.
So still sticking around to like your own style and pick up basketball, you guys do go on your own, and you share that on the pod as well. But do you have a favorite pair of shoes to ball in?
I mean, right now I currently play in Kyrie 4s, and nice. I've played in a couple iterations of the Kyries, which I really, really like. I like a lighter shoe. They're fairly light, but they obviously give you enough support. There's a million colorways of those things too. I actually just like how they look. They're actually, to me, like a fairly simple basketball shoe, which I like, in terms of the aesthetic. I guess Kyrie 4s. I'm a big fan of them right now. I'm still rocking them.
I'm a sucker for Velcro straps. So,
oh wow,
yeah. Do you choose your shoes based on performance or more of, or does the aesthetics play a part in it?
It plays a part for sure. But I really, like, I don't have a ton. I'm fortunate with having worked as a starters at NBA TV, we would get a lot of basketball shoes. But I gave away a lot of them to my buddies that were around the same size as me. Cause like, I'm not the type that I'm like, oh, I'll wear one of these this week. And then I'll wear this week. And I'll wear this. Like, I find a pair that I like, and then I always want to wear them cause they're more comfortable. I would be kidding if I said I didn't like the look of them a little bit. I don't want to be wearing ugly shoes. So it's like a little bit of both, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can identify with that. I don't want to be seen with, you know, super worn down shoes. Now it's time to donate them.
The truth is, the older I get, the less I care how I look on the basketball floor. I mean, I'm sure I cared a lot more when I was like 20, how cool I looked or how long my shorts were and stuff like that.
Right.
I don't care about that now, but I don't want them to be ugly shoes. Yeah.
As you get older, I think we get more into like, is this comfortable?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Skeets. I think I'm going to test your memory a little bit in the next couple of questions here. Do you remember what was your first jersey? Like the first jersey that you got as a gift, or maybe the first one that you bought?
First jersey overall probably wasn't even a basketball jersey, if I remember correctly. It was very, very likely a Deion Sanders Atlanta Braves jersey.
Oh, wow.
I was a big primetime fan. I mean, obviously, it was pretty cool as a kid to see a guy play baseball and then also play football.
A bit of force, I think, with the Atlanta Braves, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's really weird. I have a photo of me wearing an Atlanta Braves jersey when I was like, I'm probably like 13 or so in the picture. I remember I'm with my sister, and then like, you know, 20 years later, well, 25 years later, I moved to Atlanta. And it's just
that's
strange.
Crazy. That's kind of crazy.
It's a strange thing. Like, I wasn't really even a Braves fan. I was just a Deion Sanders fan. But I definitely might. I remember having three basketball jerseys when I was a kid. I didn't have a lot, but I had a Damon Stoudemire with the Raptors. I definitely had that. I had a Reggie Miller Pacers jersey, and I had a Nick Van Exel. And the Nick Van Exel, eventually, like, I grew up, I got older, I got rid of those jerseys, I think, because they obviously didn't fit, and I probably gave them either to pass them down to, like, you know, family members, or I gave them to Goodwill or something. And then I said, like, on a podcast, this is a couple years ago now, I said, I was like, oh, I wish I had a Nick Van Exel jersey. Like, I still like, he's still one of my favorite players, as we just talked about. It's a cool jersey, you know, the yellow Lakers. And some guy in Australia that basically owned, like, a retro jersey shop. He's like, I have one. It might fit you. I'll send it over to you. So he sent it over to me at Summer League, and I still have it. And like, I wear it to the pool and stuff like that. Yeah, so I actually have that, and I've got some other ones now, of course, and Raptors jerseys and stuff like that. But yeah, Reggie Miller, Damon Stoudemire, and Nick Van Exel were the first sort of three basketball jerseys that I had.
That is a really cool story about getting the Nick the Quick jersey back.
It was pretty awesome, and it fit perfectly too. I was like, okay, great, I'm wearing this.
It was meant to be. It was just meant to be.
That's right. Do you have a Nahara jersey?
I have a Nahara jersey with the Mavs, a Nahara jersey with the Nuggets, and a Nahara jersey with the Warriors. So the only one that I'm missing is the Bobcats one. So if there's anyone out there that has a Eduardo Nahara jersey with the Bobcats, please let me know.
Interested.
I'll get it out of your hands.
Okay, wow. That's amazing. Now, like, were those custom-made jerseys then, or were, like, those actually sold?
You know, when I was growing up, yes, there were basketball games shown on TV, but sometimes they were a little bit delayed. On cable with ESPN, of course, you would see them live. And we didn't get a lot of jerseys back home. So you had to have to ask a relative that was going to the States to bring you back one. But then the NBA decided to sort of go into Mexico a little bit more. And they're doing these replica jerseys. But it was just Nahara in the beginning.
Wow.
But my very first jersey, my coach gave it to me. It was a Mavs jersey. It was the more legit replica. It was a Champions jersey. I still have that one because it was like, three sizes too big or four.
Yeah.
I can still rock that one. The Nuggets and the Warriors one. And the Warriors one is when they went through that weird phase of like blue, navy, and orange.
Yep.
And the little lightning. Those are a little tight, but I kept them. I brought them to Canada.
That's incredible. So you're looking for the Bobcats now.
Yeah.
That's the last one.
He had
one.
A little stint there. And if someone out there has a hookup, let me know. We'll get out of your hands.
That would be, if I ever come across that, I will remember. But that's got to be very rare, I'd imagine.
I might have to get just a blank Bobcats and then print it myself.
Yeah, I think you might have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Skeets, do you remember the first NBA game that you attended?
I actually don't. I can't recall, like, well, okay, I know it was a Raptors game. There's no doubt. I mean, the Raptors come into existence right when I was truly falling in love, like really becoming a diehard fan. And so that's what, 95, 96. I lived in Stratford, though. I didn't live in Toronto, which was like 2 hours away. So I was not like, as a 15-year-old, I was not going to Toronto that frequently. I think I went for a basketball 3-on-3 tournament once, and I had maybe gone one other time with family to see the CN Tower or something like that. But I think the first game I went to, I don't think I went their inaugural season. I'm pretty sure it was the next year. And I think I went, I think I got tickets through somebody I knew at school that was like part of like a church group or something, like a bus that was going, you know, to the game that day and then would come back later that night.
Yeah.
But I can't remember who they played. I honestly can't. I know it was a Raptors game, of course. And I'm pretty sure it was with that church group. And that's really all I remember. So it's pretty wild that I can't remember who they played. I should try and figure out the date or something, but I don't even know that. But
yeah. I guess you could backtrack it. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you obviously remember going to the game, but you don't remember the rival.
Yeah, I don't. And I don't really remember much else from the game. Again, it was probably I was almost more excited, like I was going to Toronto and I was on this, you know, excursion, you know, I was probably 15 or 16. So I was a little older. I mean, it's not that far fetched, but, I can't remember. I know some people that were for sure with me on that trip, like on that exchange thing or whatever, trip.
Yeah.
I'll have to track them down. I bet you somebody remembers. I'll ask them. I'll try and get you an answer.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, regarding basketball in general, jerseys, shoes, balls, whatever, do you have a most valued basketball possession?
I have a lot of stuff. I mean, if you obviously saw the starter show, we had a ton of stuff behind us on set.
Yeah.
A lot of that was my own personal stuff.
Oh, wow.
Almost all the art. I mean, some of it's Lee's that hangs in our No Dunks office now.
Yeah.
That you can see on our YouTube channel. A lot of that's mine as well. And I love all that stuff. And I remember I bought a bunch of stuff off eBay to help fill the set out and stuff like that. Just like random things. But I think my favorite, I mean, we decided, I want to say Amsterdam, but I might have that wrong. But someone overseas, someone in Europe, they got a flag made, the starter's flag.
Right.
And really cool, like high quality, like a big giant flag and had the starter's logo on it. And they sent it over and we were like, this is amazing. And then I think, I forget who it was, but we were like, oh, every time we get a guest on, we should have them sign the flag.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I remember now.
Yeah. So we were pretty fortunate, of course, working at NBA TV to have like Hall of Famers on, current star players, you know, at Vegas Summer League, you know, like rookies and stuff like that. So WNBA stars like Candace Parker. So if they ever came, I guess we did it when they only came to the studio, but when they came to the studio, we'd had them sign it. So now like this flag has like, you know, I don't know how many of like the greatest players of all time have signed it, like Shaq and Dikembe Mutombo and Isaiah Thomas and like on and on, Gary Payton, on and on and on and on. So that to me is like a prized possession. It's like obviously brings back all those memories of those people coming in on the show. It's pretty cool. It's pretty full now too. So I'd say that is an obvious like prized possession.
I don't think you can even compare that to anything else really.
Yeah. There's nothing like, I mean, I have jerseys and I have, like you said, like the odd ball and like cool little knickknack things that I've bought, but like, that's pretty, you can't, like, no one else has that. You know, it means a lot. Obviously.
It cannot be replicated, right? Like,
no,
jerseys can always be signed and whatnot, but this is
right.
One of one, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Skeets, moving away a little bit from basketball, you're like running and you've been vocal about it. So, do you have a favorite pair of shoes to go for a run in?
I generally rock Nikes and I love the Zoom Fly SPs. That's what I wear. I wear those majority for training because you just put sort of heavier mileage on them and you can beat them up and stuff like that. And then if I have a race, I'll probably race in like the 4% that I have, you know, the super light shoes. Now they have, obviously, now they have newer versions of those.
And those are the controversial shoes, right? The ones
they're a couple years old now, but they were sort of at the forefront of that technology, that carbon plate. You know, you really do wear them and it feels like you're being propelled forward a little bit. Like you don't wear them for fashion. Like they're not that comfortable to walk around in. Like you want to run in them because you want to move forward.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. Like now they've made better and better and better versions of those. And now that's become controversial. But those shoes work. I mean, like they're incredible. I threw down my best time ever in them. And I'd only worn them like twice prior and they were so comfortable, but for just normal day running, I run in like the Zoom Fly SPs or something similar to that.
And these questions are, I'm sure people are out there are wondering, but they're a little bit selfish because I'm also, well, now it's been suspended, but I'm training for a half marathon. So my next question is, what advice would you give to people, AKA me, preparing for a half or a full marathon?
Honestly, the advice I'd give the most is if you can, to join a running club. They're so, so beneficial. I think they just help people sort of start to fall in love with running a little bit more. You surround yourself with and a lot of people at first are like intimidated to do it. And I'm sure it changes from running club to running club, but there honestly is at a lot of them people of all levels. So you go to the club and like, you know, you might be worried like, oh, I'm going to be the slowest. Like, what's the point of this? But it's not like that. Like they're really inclusive for the most part. And there are slower runners and then there are medium runners and there are elite runners. And you can always like, you know, especially if you're just starting with the sport, you can learn a lot from the people that have been doing it longer. And I find those people to be like or at least my experience, again, both in Toronto when I was there and even here in Atlanta, people are just like so knowledgeable and they're so encouraging. And it's like, it's running is such a, it's like such a solo sport, like especially long distance running, but right. in a weird way with the running club, it becomes like a team sport. And I think that can help encourage, especially newbies or people trying to get better at running, to learn a lot of things and just be, you know, just more encouraged to try it and continue to do it. So that's my biggest suggestion is like, try and find a running club, even if it's once a week. And yeah. you also just make a bunch of friends, you know, running with people bonds you in a weird way. So,
true.
You know, putting true, yourself yeah. through that punishment at times, you can become pretty close with people. So that's a one suggestion for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I know there's a few here in the city. But yeah, to be honest, I've been a little bit intimidated because I don't know if I'm going to be at the back of the group and then just slowing everyone down.
No, but that's like, not exactly. And that's exactly what most people think. But and again, I know it is different, I'm sure, from running club to running club. But right. a lot of them, they actually, they'll have people that like will, it's like a no runner left behind type of mentality, right? It's like yeah. there will be people that like sort of are slower, naturally slower or just starting. And you're not keeping anyone behind because like, if I'm a lot faster than you, I'm running with people that are more my speed. And it's like,
right.
you know, it's not like the whole group runs together. It's sort of like these more factions and then you all meet back up and have a beer after or something like that. So I'd highly encourage you trying it. I mean, it worked for me and it really got me more interested in the sport.
I'll definitely going to give it a shot.
I'm going to give it a go at the very least.
Yeah. Skeets, now moving into the professional life of Skeets, you've been through, obviously, I don't know if a roller coaster might be the appropriate word, but you, for lack of a better term, I'm going to go ahead with that, with, you know, so many iterations of the show being the podcast, being the yep. Basketball Jones, being the starters, and now No Dunks.
Yeah.
If I could ask you to maybe choose a highlight, a special moment from each era, mainly the TBJ, the starters, and No Dunks, what would those highlights be?
Yeah, it's a good question. And we've been doing this a long time. Yeah. We started the Basketball Jones in 2006. So it's a long time. what are we, 14 years here. I think from the Basketball Jones era, my most memorable moment, one of my favorite moments is probably, we did a couple live shows.
Yeah.
And we did a live show for our fifth year anniversary of the show. Yeah. We had gotten up to 5 years at that point and had done obviously a ton of podcasts. So we did a live show. It was our second live show we had ever done. And we had a lot of fun with it because we got super creative and we literally wrote like a musical and performed like a part musical. Then we did a part game show and then we did a part roast where JD and Mattio roasted, and Trey actually, roasted Tass and I. So we did these three things all within this one live show. And like, we obviously put a ton of work into it and, people seemed to really get a good kick out of it. And it was like, wow, we just pulled off that, which was really cool.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, it used to be up on YouTube. I'm not sure if it is anymore. But it was, the musical part is amazing too. I mean, we wrote and like performed it and it was, I think it's pretty funny because it was like the musical was telling the story of how we started the show. The podcast.
Right.
And anyway, it was, had a bunch of inside jokes and stuff like that for people that have been listening. The starters era would be, I mean, it's tough not to, go immediately to when Shaq gave me a wedgie on the air. it's going to be, you know, one of the funnier stories I'll ever have to tell, you know, whatever people, 20, 30, 40 years from now. And you know, that clip is on YouTube and we obviously, for anyone that's listening, doesn't know, we always tracked wedgies and that's when the ball gets stuck between the rim and the backboard. And then we knew we were going to be able to get Shaq in for an episode. And that was rare in of itself because Shaq does whatever Shaq wants to do, but he's like, well, what am I doing? And then somebody came up with the idea. I was like, well, we need a wedgie cause we're trying to get to 50. Maybe we should make a sacrifice to the wedgie gods. And that was going to be drawing straws live on the air, live television, live on the air. Whoever had the short straw, whoever drew it, would have to get a wedgie from Shaq. And I drew it. I mean, I was holding the straws. And the guys picked, and I'm like, oh, my God, I got the shortest straw. And then Shaq basically ripped my underwear off. I mean, he gave me an atomic wedge. He lifted me off the ground, and he had so much fun doing it. Like, it is a funny clip because Shaq is also 7 feet tall and 350 pounds, and I'm like 5'10" and like, you know, 140 soaking wet. It was a painful memory, but it's a pretty funny memory. Of Shaq literally ripping underwear off me. even when I just say it out loud, it sounds insane, but it's a thing that happened.
It's also a one of one for sure.
Yeah, that's never gonna happen again.
Yeah.
So I'll go with that as a favorite memory. Though we had so many fun, especially like fun like pick 'em payoff shows where like I did a show with a snake around my neck and I did a show from a box. Like I was literally in a box trying to host the show. And I did a show running on a treadmill for the entire show. All those are really, really memorable shows just because they're different. Right. And then No Dunks. I mean, No Dunks is obviously a lot newer. So it's more difficult for me to pick like a specific show. It's probably my moment was like when JD and I finally could come back from Canada,
right?
Because we had obviously like sort of strange work visa issues, and then to start with the season we had to work from Canada and the rest of the guys were here. And then once we all got back, it was like obviously a pretty feel-good moment, and we were all in our own studio and just pumping out the No Dunks content for the Athletic. So I'll say that, sort of cheating a little bit, but I'll go with that for now.
You know what? It's not cheating because this is a great segue for my next question.
Okay.
So we both live and work in places where we were not born. So I'm just going to skip the whole, you know, basically you and JD were stuck in Canada for a while.
Yeah.
JD, a little bit longer than you.
Yep.
While waiting for your paperwork and everything, you had all those hoops that you had to jump through to go back to the States and go back to your regular life, right? I cannot identify more to that because, you know, when I was a student here, you know, like, oh, my visa's coming up. I need to apply to this, and I also need to apply that, and make sure you have that form filled, and this one has to go there, and you know what I'm talking about.
It is the worst. It's infuriating how difficult and complicated and at times expensive all of it is.
Expensive.
Is crazy.
That's one thing that I don't think anyone out there thinking to go work or live abroad thinks about, the admin costs. Applying to stuff, it's painful. It is painful.
It's painful. I've just, my wife and I are in the process now. We're on work visas, or I'm on a work visa, but we're in the process of starting our green card process.
Yeah.
And that's obviously more, thousands of more dollars. And like, it's just a nightmare. It is crazy. You know, you feel for a lot of people in this country here in America and Canada, across the world, of like, I want to live here. I want to contribute to society. I want to pay taxes. I want to do this and that and buy a house. And it's like, they make it difficult.
Especially, you know, when you're doing it the quote unquote, the right way, you know, like going through all this, it's just infuriating that sometimes you have to go through it, but you know, it's immigrant life.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my question is, if you had the chance to live and work anywhere in the world, Wiggins Island included, where would you go?
Okay, I wouldn't be going to Wiggins Island. But I'm not sure I have Wi-Fi capabilities on Wiggins Island. Wow, that's a good question. Maybe Portugal.
Oh, okay.
Maybe Portugal, okay. Yeah. Now you get into complications with the time difference. And I'm not smart enough to do the math right off of my head, but you know, the idea of like, when would you watch games and then when would you comment on them? That could be a complication, but in the perfect scenario, a perfect world, I mean, I love Portugal. It's one of my favorite countries I've been to. I want to go back, and bouncing all around it. I just love the vibe of it. Obviously it's beautiful. The food's incredible. You're still local enough that you can go other places. So I guess Portugal, but I mean, look, I miss Canada a lot of times, so I would work again from Canada. I would work in Vancouver for sure, out west. And I mean, Australia too. I've had a lot of fun in Australia, but I guess I'll go Portugal. If I got to pick one, I'll go Portugal.
I didn't see that one coming, but it sounds, I've never been to Portugal. But I've been to England. I mean, that's as far as Europe as I've been. And Europe in general is just, it's hard to not be on your short list of places to go.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I've been to Paris. I love Paris.
Yeah.
Greece I've been to, and Portugal we loved, and a couple other, but I really just love the vibe of Portugal. And I think a part of it too is it's becoming more and more popular, obviously before the coronavirus, of a destination to travel to. But at the time, it was a little bit more of like a bit of an unknown gem, that, you know, it wasn't inundated with crowds and tourists and stuff like that. I'm sure it's slowly maybe getting more and more popular, but it's beautiful. So there's a reason why. Go there.
Time to practice Portuguese then.
Yeah. I could definitely, I need a lot of work in that regard. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that you miss Canada a little bit. So just to give you your Canadian dose of the day, we're going to move on to talk a little bit Canada basketball and your Toronto Raptors.
Okay.
So, Skeets, you generally give shout-outs to the Canadians in the league. Or at least you make a point to try to highlight them, because they're rarely mentioned for majority of the time. And I know that this question you sort of explored it with, I think it was the Raptors rationalist, I can remember. From the current cohort of the Canadians in the league, who do you think might have the most memorable career in the future? So now, I think safe to say Steve Nash is on top.
Yeah.
But from the current cohort, who do you think might be getting to that level?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. It looks difficult. I mean, it's tough to look at any Canadian player currently in the league and go, wow, is that person going to win, you know, 2 or 3 MVPs and somehow knock off Nash? I mean, unlikely, let's say it that. But it's only between two players currently in the NBA, and it's Jamal Murray, Kitchener's finest, or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think it's really only those two that you could look at, considering their age and considering how talented they look already, to project them to like all-star, all-NBA, you know, maybe one day, probably not, but flirting with MVPs or something like that. And yeah, we had this debate on like the podcast you just previously mentioned. So it's like, you know, is it Jamal or is it SGA? I think still right now, I would still go Jamal Murray as the better Canadian basketball player, like right now.
Yeah.
But that makes sense because he's been in the league longer. He's a little older than SGA. But SGA, it's tough not to pick him, just how quickly how incredible of impact he's had immediately in the league.
Yeah.
Only in his second season. And he's doing it on a good team, and he's like hits clutch shots, and he's just so cool, and he can help you across the board too. He can score the ball. He's obviously a great playmaker. He rebounds well because he's a larger guard. He plays great defense already. So that was a long-winded way of getting to, I'll probably go Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to sort of have the higher trajectory than a Jamal Murray. But, you know, I hope they're neck and neck for, you know, a decade to go here. I hope we can be debating this 10 years from now, and it's a great debate still.
I think we will, just based on the amount of Canadians now playing in college, in the NBA.
Yeah.
In college in the States, and hopefully making it to the NBA as well. But I agree. My money is on Shai. Just because also, you know, I mean, Steve Nash is the standard, and I don't know if it's fair for them, but, you know, withholding them to those standards, Steve Nash had also a bit of a slow start to his career.
Oh, yeah, very.
People booed him in Dallas.
Yep.
They called him overweight. I don't know if he was, but... and then he found Dirk, right? And they were both, like, they found each other, and that's when they were like, all right, let's sort of stick together and do whatever we can do best. And I think Shai sort of resembles that, a bit of a, not necessarily a slow start. He was a great rookie with the Clippers. And now, but I think in Chris Paul, he sort of might have found a little bit of a Dirk in his partner and a mentor as well.
A mentor more than anything, for sure. Yeah. And I'll throw in, because it's so early and he's only played, till the point where we've hit suspension now of the league, 60 games, RJ Barrett, I mean, you know, a top 3 pick, has looked great at times, has looked like a rookie at other times, but, you know, could RJ Barrett in year 3 be Jason Tatum the way he was playing? I mean,
I don't see why not.
I think it's possible. I think that's really up to RJ Barrett now, hard he works, and he has Steve Nash as a godfather, and obviously his father, Rowan. So it's like, I think he needs to be included in this, but I'm with you, all that stuff you said. SGA right now, he just looks like a fantastic point guard that you could see being a great point guard for like 10 or 15 years. Yeah,
for sure. And RJ, I think if he sticks with the Knicks, I mean, all drama aside, but that's he's probably going to be the first go-to option for in terms of scoring.
Yeah,
in the very near future. So he also got a really good chance at getting to a different level.
Yeah, and I'll say one more thing about SGA. I mean, it sort of just hit me now, and maybe somebody's made this comparison before. I don't know, probably have, but you know, we used to. I've heard people talk about, man, Sean Livingston. If Sean Livingston didn't get injured and have that gruesome fall, that guy would have been like all NBA, like, you know, multiple time All Star, blah 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 blah. It's I see a lot of similarities in a young SGA in a young Sean Livingston. So, you know, knock on wood, nothing happens to SGA, and maybe we see what Livingston could have been. Maybe, you know, who had an unbelievable career still and won titles and was instrumental, but like. Maybe that's like the what if he doesn't get injured. Maybe he's that sort of superstar-ish type player. Maybe. Who knows?
I've never heard that comparison. So there you have it, folks. A Dropping Dimes exclusive with Skeets. It's SGA, the what if of Sean Livingston potentially.
Maybe. Yeah, we gotta run with that. We gotta see if that pans out.
Skeets, as you probably know, Team Canada will play in Victoria, the capital of beautiful British Columbia, this June.
Yep.
Fingers crossed that things don't get canceled. As it is right now, they're scheduled to play against Greece and China in their group, and then potentially face either Uruguay, the Czech Republic, or Turkey to punch their ticket into the Olympics. So they have to jump through a lot of teams, go through not only get together as a team themselves, but then go through other stronger teams. Maybe Giannis, depends on how long and what happens with the season, might be in that series. But do you think that Team Canada can win this mini tournament and punch their tickets into the Olympics?
I mean, I would like to think so, the answer being yes. But as you said, this is almost impossible to predict because, one, we don't even know if it's going to happen because we don't even know if the Olympics are going to happen. And then on top of that, let's say it is going to be still occurring. It all now depends on what we do with the NBA season. Are we starting in a month from now, and then are we still playing out the regular season? Because if that's the case, then the playoffs are bumped back an entire month.
Yeah.
And then we're getting into the part where all these NBA guys that we talked about, you know, Murray and SGA and a bunch of the other guys that committed as well, a lot of good talent, you know, Brandon Clark and so on.
Yeah.
The Canadian guys, like, I don't know, like the possibility they couldn't even go play because of – multiple reasons. One, they might still heck be playing, like you said, with Giannis and Team Greece. And the other thing just being like their teams may not want them to suddenly. And I know they've already committed and everybody got really excited. I will even say as a diehard Team Canada fan, I think with these unforeseen circumstances, I think we would understand if guys
absolutely
decided they suddenly couldn't play. Yeah. I mean, I still hope that's not the case, but I think we would understand it just because no one saw this coming. If everybody plays and Team Canada has the team that we think they could have together, all these commitments, and you're coached by Nick Nurse and you're on home court, obviously out there in Victoria, yeah, I think they could win it. I think they absolutely could beat a lot of these teams, and you have to win the tournament, like you said, to punch your hypothetical ticket to the hypothetical Olympics.
Yeah.
But it's just so unknown. I just don't know who's going to be on the team, and we don't even know what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree here. I mean, there are so many what ifs right now, but in a scenario where things happen, I would like to also remain very optimistic. Having said that, I was disappointed of the results of the World Cup, as I'm sure that most Canadians were. But after that, to see all the NBA talent sort of rallying up and saying like, "No, we're gonna do this," gave us that hope. And playing obviously in home court in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
That must be huge. Or hopefully that will play a difference if things happen. I'll be there. I already got my ticket. So
fingers
crossed that I'll be able to go and root hard for Canada there.
I really, truly hope it happens because I think we would see some pretty awesome crowds out there.
I think so,
You know, helping to encourage the guys. And again, like, let's not forget Nick Nurse as the coach of Team Canada. I mean, that's a big up on a lot of teams.
Absolutely. And I mean, this was not an agenda, but you know, Nick Nurse by far, if not the best coach right now in this season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think he's on the short list. He's proven it, you know, he proved it obviously winning a title last year, and he's proven it with how he's dealt with injuries this year, team still being amazing. And he's just, I mean, I've said this before on our podcast, I know, but like, I love that he's not afraid to like rip up the game plan and go, let's try something else. You know, I thought we were going to tackle the game this way and try and slow the team this way. It's not working. Let's try this.
Yeah.
And a lot of coaches don't like to do that. They are stuck in their ways.
True.
And he really does seem to be the opposite of that. And I think his players trust him for that reason. I think he listens to them as well. I think a guy like Kyle Lowry could go to him and say, hey, this isn't working. We should try this. And he will say, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, he obviously seems to be an enjoyable enough guy that people want to play hard for him. And he's good at rallying these guys. So, yeah, I think he's a big, big plus to Team Canada. I think that's being overlooked a little bit. So hopefully he's there. Hopefully it happens. And hopefully all these talented NBA Canadians play together and hopefully go to the Olympics. It'd be amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And since we're talking now Raptors, Nurse Kelleher, Skeets, and I think you mentioned this before, but in your opinion, who is the best Raptor ever? Like, who is the most talented player, the best talented Raptor ever, and the best Raptor ever? Because I think those are two different players, in my opinion. But what do you think?
They absolutely are. The greatest Raptor ever, to me, is Kyle Lowry, hands down.
Right.
I think, you know, the impact he's had on the franchise, obviously all the winning he's had on the franchise, finally getting it done with Kawhi, of course, and other guys. But to me, when it, like, who knows how much longer he'll be there, his place in the record books and franchise record books. I mean, he's such a fan favorite too, with the way he plays, you know, not being like a flashy high draft pick or anything like that, finding his way in the league in a couple spots, looking like he could have been out of the league. And then, you know, looked like he was going to be traded, heck, from the Raptors at one point, and was going to be until, you know, Dolan, because he's Dolan, decides to, you know, say no to that one. Thank God. I just go Lowry as the greatest Raptor of all time, encompassing of his career with them. The most talented Raptor of all time, that's a little more tricky, because it's not Lowry. It really isn't. Yeah. It is probably to me Kawhi. I think Kawhi Leonard is a better, at his peak, as we saw in the playoffs last year with the Raps, and his impact on both ends of the floor, is the better player than Vince Carter, is the better player than Chris Bosh, is the better player than DeRozan. So I don't see how it's really not Kawhi as the most talented to ever put on a Raptors jersey. And yeah, I know Hakeem Olajuwon also put on a Raptors jersey, but that doesn't truly count. We all know that. So Kawhi most talented, Lowry the greatest Raptor of all time.
Great. Is there a Raptors game that you would like to relive again?
Okay, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Can I change the outcome if I relive it?
Oh, you know what? I'll allow it.
Okay. Okay, because if I can change the outcome, I would relive, or I would hopefully it would go differently. It would obviously go differently if I have those powers.
Yeah.
Game 6, 2007 playoffs versus the Nets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the Raptors lost in 6. They lost that game. I believe it was like 98-97. I know it was a one-point game. Now, I know this because – or I'm pretty confident I know this because I was there. I was at that game.
Yeah.
And I remember – you know, the Raptors hadn't made the playoffs for like 4 or 5 years there prior to this playoff. And they get in, and they're playing the Nets. And I remember I was at Game 5 in Toronto. I was living in Toronto at the time. I'm there with buddies. They win Game 5. Okay, now it's a series. They're down 3-2. You know, they win one in New Jersey,
right,
coming back here for Game 7. And I remember we got home from the game, Game 5, and I'm like, let's go. Let's buy tickets. I mean, I think it was – I'm pretty sure it was a weekend game. It must have been a weekend game. I'm like, let's buy tickets. You know, I'll get them right now. I'll buy 4 tickets. Steesh, you're driving. We'll find a hotel. Let's make a weekend of it. Let's go down, win Game 6, come back for Game 7, win a playoff series. Best of 7 playoffs. They had never won a best of 7 playoff series at that point. They had won only a best of 5 years prior. So we went. Anyway, the whole point is we went, and Jose Calderon, he just didn't throw that ball high enough at the end. I think that oop was still there. Jefferson stole it, and we lost. So I would change the outcome. Because it was pretty deflating being in their arena, you know, rocking the Raptors gear, and then your team loses, and you had home court advantage, and Yeah. No, never a good feeling. We had fun still in the New York area that weekend. We had a blast. We probably had too many drinks drinking our sorrows away, but it was made for a much longer drive home. Let's put it that way. If they had won.
Oh, totally. I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. If they had won, I can't, we'd probably still be there for crying out loud. So I'll change game 6, 2007 playoffs versus the Nets at the, I think it was called the Izod Center at the time.
Yeah, you're probably right, yeah.
I think it was, yeah.
In a parallel universe, that happened. So that parallel universe kids is probably very, very happy right now.
Okay, great. Good to know.
From the Raptors, obviously still defending champs, and for the foreseeable future, still defending
champs. Oh, yeah. I'm going to be defending champs for a while, unfortunately, really.
But can you please take us through a few of the moments of what was to seeing the Raptors winning it all? I was in LA during that happened, and full disclosure, I'm a huge Lakers fan. I'm playing my Vancouver card right now with wearing the Grizzlies jersey
nice.
Here. And I've seen the Lakers win, luckily, a couple of times, and it's hard to explain in words how sweet it is. And I can only imagine for Raptors fans seeing your team win for the first time, being the underdog against, you know, yeah, circumstances aside, you people get hurt and players get hurt, but how was it to see the Raptors winning in your eyes?
The only word I can still only use is like surreal. I mean, it at times truthfully feels like a dream, because especially with what was going on with our show at the Starters at the time, and we were not going to be re-signed, so we were not going to sign another contract with them, so we knew we were moving on from the Starters, and we knew that these final shows in the playoffs with the Raptors in the championship were going to be some of our final shows. So it made for a very extra weird, surreal feeling, like knowing that this chapter of our show is done at the Starters with NBA TV, and oh my God, the Raptors are in the championship series, and they could actually pull this off because of a lot of, you know, circumstances, no doubt. So it was just really trippy. And like the other part of it was we got the opportunity, which was really cool, to fly home to do these shows. And we were in Toronto for game 5 on the air on NBA TV talking about how this could be our last show. Now we were saying it to the audience, like this might be it for us as the Starters.
Yeah.
Because we might, you know, the arena right behind us, we're going to go in there after this live show and the Raptors might win a title. And of course, it was really crazy because we were in there. The Raptors were up like whatever it was, 8 or 10 points with 3 minutes to go. And it looked like, oh my God, they're going to do this.
Yeah.
And the crowd was going crazy. And then of course the Splash Brothers, you know, did what they do and hit a bunch of threes. And then suddenly we had a game 6. So that part was weird. But then I got to stay in Toronto for game 6 because they wanted a correspondent from our show, NBA TV did, to be there in case the Raptors would win on the road in Oakland, which of course we all now know they did. So I had the opportunity. I was in Jurassic Park the night of game 6. So it was extra special for me. I got to be there in Toronto. I know the game was in Oakland, so it was a little weird. But, you know, you saw the crowds. There was still thousands among thousands of people. And all my friends live in Toronto because I had lived there so long. You know, I obviously was in Atlanta, but had flown up. Mm-hmm. And so I did a couple hits before the game started. And then I just got to watch the game in Jurassic Park on the side of the arena, you know, living and dying with every basket, throwing beer up in the air and popcorn up in the air and overreacting after every bad call and blah, 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 blah. And then they won. And I got to, like, just go, you know, basically hug a bunch of strangers and celebrate because the Raptors had pulled it off. And then I had to go on TV and do like a couple live hits. And that was weird. And I just, the only thing, like I was in a daze and I just remember talking about the importance to kids in Canada,
right,
this moment, because I remember when I was a kid watching the Blue Jays win the World Series and how much like it made me sort of fall in love with the Jays and baseball. And I'm like, I can only imagine that's happening right now with like 13, 14 year old, you know, younger kids in Canada, like, oh my God, the Raptors won, and oh my God, basketball's so cool, and like, this is amazing. It's like such a bonding experience. So I remember talking about that, I think on the air. I was yelling because the place is going nuts. I'm screaming. I barely hear the people back in Atlanta and in Oakland where I'm talking to. And then, you know, I was done. They said, you're clear. And I was like, texting my buddies, like, where are we meeting? Where are we partying? but like you couldn't take a Uber anywhere. You couldn't take transit anywhere because like you couldn't, there was just thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people on the streets, everybody high-fiving, everybody in the best mood. So I walked my way up to Queen Street for those that are from Toronto listening to this. And it took forever to get there because I'm stopping, I'm talking to people. People are sort of recognizing me. I'm taking photos. Blah, blah, blah. Everybody's such a good mood. And then I finally met up with my friends who were walking from another party that they watched the game. We met up and then we did a little bar hopping the way back to a friend's house. We just partied until like, you know, like 5 or 6 in the morning. Then I got on a flight like early the next morning. So I was dead. I was a zombie and flew back to Atlanta to do our final show. Cause then we did one more podcast,
right,
as the starters. So I know that was a long time. That was a story time there for me, but,
no, it was perfect.
It's still when I even talking to you now saying all that, it was such a trip that it all happened that way. It was so like, in a weird way, it was like the perfect ending to the starters. Cause it was like, everybody knew we were Raptors fans and everyone was so happy for us. Like my phone exploded after the Raps won. Like I was a player, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, like congratulatory texts and like, I'm so happy for you. And it's like, I'm just a fan. And it was a pretty surreal, and like the tweets and stuff like that. So yeah, it was amazing.
I had to see the Raptors. I was in LA at a conference for work and I was the only person at a bar. Obviously I jumped on the bandwagon, you know, living in Canada and whatnot. I was the only person in that bar getting excited every time the Raptors scored, and I was getting these weird looks. I'm like, I think I'll just go back to my hotel. I FaceTimed my girlfriend. She was with friends. And yeah, when it was all said and done, you know, I just saw her, like it was impossible to get to talk to her. And I was jumping on my bed at the hotel, and the colleague that I was with is like, are you okay? Because her room was ironically right underneath mine. It's like, are you okay? Because I hear a lot of smashing in your room. Like
jumping around. Like,
the Raptors won. I never think I would see that happening. And like, and then the first thing she's like, I thought you were a Lakers fan. I'm like, you don't understand. The Raptors won. I'm excited.
Yeah, exactly. You really don't unless you're Canadian. And that was the other part. It was like, it was all of Canada cheering for one team to pull it off.
Yeah.
And they did. I mean, the only thing I'll say about that final game is I hated the ending. Remember there was that really awkward fouling, time on the clock, and it was
very
like,
anticlimactic.
It was super anticlimactic. Even in Jurassic Park, everyone was like, should we celebrate? And everyone's like, no, don't celebrate yet. Like you wanted to, like you just wanted that perfect like clock ticking down, and you didn't get that. So that was the only thing.
But the one thing that I wanted was to have Kyle Lowry with the ball and tossing it up in the air, you know, classic, it's over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the ending was not ideal, but the end result was.
Especially in Jurassic Park, I wanted to hear like 50,000 people chant down like 10, 9, right. 8, you know, you didn't really get that. It was like this weird stop and go, but who cares? Yeah, bigger problems.
So now that we've sort of, you know, relieved the Raptors winning and all that, I have a bone to pick with you, Skeets.
Okay. Yep.
And this is going to move us into our Why Can't We Be Friends segment.
Okay.
So not so long ago, in a Beach Stepping episode, you mentioned that people from British Columbia or Vancouver, you know, and I'm generalizing, I know that you're from Scarborough, but I'm generalizing, you know, Toronto, Ontario.
No, I'm from Stratford.
Stratford, sorry, not Scarborough. Yeah, Stratford. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
No, that's all right.
But you mentioned that people from Vancouver / BC, when they go to a party, they're weird because they take whatever they brought to the party, they take it back.
Right. I said specifically that if they were to show up to a house party with a six pack of beer, as you would, that, and of course I was generalizing and having a bit of fun with it, that they're more likely to then at the end of the night be like, oh, there's 3 of my beers left. I'm going to take my 3 beers that I brought in this six pack home. Whereas like, that's insane. You brought a six pack to a party. You leave the beer. What are you doing? Yeah.
So having that in mind and being the proud Vancouverite that I am now, even though I wanted to move to Toronto for the longest time now, I propose that we play a little game, Why Can't We Be Friends, in which we have 3 rounds, if that's okay with you. And we throw at each other friendly jabs. And these jabs consist of stereotypes about people from Toronto, Ontario, Stratford, Vancouver, British Columbia.
Okay.
So I'm happy to start off to get us started.
Yeah, start. Yeah, this will be tough. Okay, go ahead.
Here's my first jab. And I have this written down. So, milk bag. Who in the world puts milk in a plastic bag. It is all cold and floppy. I've never had one in my hand, but I assume that's how it feels, you know, all cold and floppy. Yeah. Also, it probably has that layer coat of like cold sweat from being too cold in the fridge. So when you grab it, it's all drippy. Like, who does that? Come on, Ontario, Toronto, get it right.
Yeah, you know, milk bag, it's but the beauty of a milk bag is you can buy it so much more in bulk, right? Because you can get like the bag of it and it's like four of those milk bags in one. I worked in a convenience store, so we
oh,
sold.
Oh, so you have insight. Bags. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I remember selling milk bags. And well, of course, we had them in our house. And you got the weird little snip thing that you slice it. And that's a skill in of itself. You don't want to make the hole too big. You don't want the hole to be too small. But I hear you. That's fair. So what? Now I come back with a...
Now, yeah, this is your chance for a comeback.
I don't know what to say. I mean, look, like... You Vancouver people, you British Columbia people, you're just you're too caught up in the outdoors. I don't know. I'm reaching for anything.
That's like, fair. No, that is fair.
You're spoiled. You're absolutely spoiled. You don't appreciate, like an Ontarian, the spring months. That's my beef. You don't appreciate spring, and you don't really. Have a beautiful like patio season like they have in Toronto, because we know we went through the crap of those winter months for 5-6 months, so long, so dark, so cold, you couldn't see your friends. And when that weather turns and it's spring, Toronto is alive. And you guys don't have it because you're spoiled. You're too used to the nice weather. That's the best I can come up with.
That is, in very Canadian fashion, the nicest jab I've ever received.
Yeah, that's a pretty nice jab.
I have one last one, if you don't mind.
Oh, go ahead.
Toronto is the center of the universe. As in, oh my God, it doesn't take you long to know that someone is from Toronto because they will let you know that they're from Toronto.
Mm.
The unofficial capital of Canada. Our stock exchange is in Toronto. All of our, most of the professional sports, you know, the Raptors, obviously, the Maple Leafs, the Blue Jays, the Argos, the Toronto Rock, for Pete's sake, in Toronto versus other cities, you know, Montreal, Vancouver. We don't have all of those sports. So Toronto is the center of the universe, and we're just trying to play catch up. That's my jab at Toronto.
Well, to then flip that around, you British Columbia people, you have an inferiority complex. All right, and here's this is the funny part. This is the funny part. You actually, as a Canadian, you have two levels of inferiority complex. I can barely say it. You know, all Canadians have that problem with Americans.
True.
Even though Canadians are better, and just own it and just lean into that. Don't worry about what the heck's going on down here. But we have that little brother syndrome.
Right.
And then Vancouverites, especially, have that with Toronto people. And you shouldn't. You live in Vancouver. It's beautiful. But you're always a little worried. You're like, oh, what's going on over there? Oh, what do they got now when talking about Toronto? So it's like a double level. There, that one hit a little harder.
That one was really good. I'll give it to you. Yeah.
All right, good.
I'll call that's this all a I got. Tie. I'll call this a tie in very Canadian fashion.
Very perfect.
All right, Skeets. My last question to you, and again, thank you so much for your time. It's also a bit of a follow-up. In one of the most recent episodes from No Dunks, the squad episode where you guys got to draft your imaginary NBA franchise, which was one of my favorites by far. You guys had a lot of fun, and it was fun to see artists actually bringing those concepts to life. But you mentioned that one of the cities in your list was Vancouver.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask if maybe you went through the exercise of giving them a branding, a celebrity endorser, and a concession stand item. And what that was.
Yeah, that's right. Tass scooped me. He had in our draft, that squad episode, he was higher above me in the city draft portion. So he scooped me. He straight up took Vancouver, had it on my list. I ended up going Vegas, but I definitely would have taken Vancouver. Now, then Tass called his team the Vancouver Villains.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
Great name, actually.
I like it, yeah.
It's sort of cool. I don't mind it at all. Though there was some confusion in whether you could make up a name or you had to pick another name from another sport, right? Which most of us were doing. But we let it go because it sounded so cool. If, though, I could make it up, Vancouver, like team name. I feel like it, and I'm spitballing here, but I feel like it could be something to do with like the water, I think, with Vancouver, you know, being on the water. So I don't know like, you know, a lot of water animals are not maybe like the scariest, like it's, I'm not going to go dolphins or seals or stuff like that, but maybe like the Kraken, like the Krakens or something like that. Yeah. Sort of like a mythical like water that. Beast. Yeah. Might be something there. So I guess I'll go with that. Now, and I'm not just saying this because you're rocking the hoodie, but the color scheme would definitely be bring it back, the teal that they had originally.
Yeah.
It looks amazing. Now the Memphis Grizzlies are rocking it. It looks even better than it even did back in the 90s when they had the team. So I'm bringing that back. No brainer with mainly the teal and white and stuff like that.
100%.
What a concession item. Man, that's a difficult answer.
That is.
What's Vancouver like most known for?
That's a good question. I mean, sushi. Really, we have really. Good sushi.
I was actually gonna say that. Yeah, with the strong like Japanese influence in Vancouver for sure. I'll go sushi. Like some sort of specialty sushi as my concession item. And celebrity ambassador. Let's go Seth Rogen.
I was going to say, you know, if you need help, Seth Rogen, that's a low-hanging fruit. And I'm pretty sure he would do it, 100%.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know if he's a diehard basketball fan per se, but I feel like he would rally behind the team for sure.
He reached out to the public transit company to do the announcements for a little bit just because he was proud to be a Vancouverite. So I'm pretty sure he would do it for an NBA team.
Okay. So he would cheer for the Vancouver Krakens? Yeah, I can see that.
I can see that.
Okay, so there you go. Built my team.
Vancouver Krakens. Yeah, really bad impression, but there you go. It's my best Seth Rogen impression.
It's not bad.
Skeets, I cannot thank you enough for saying yes to being on the show. Be completely honest with you, I've been a fan of you guys since the Basketball Jones days. When I was an international student, still figuring things out, it was always great to go back home and just relax, watch some basketball. But the thing that makes you different, guys, is that you have fun. And you guys are friends during when you record this, and that can be seen through the Basketball Jones, the Starters, and No Dunks. It is informative, but it is incredibly fun.
Being good.
All of your listeners, we all feel like you guys are our friends because you go with us all the time, whether it's commuting to work or on a run or whatever. And I have to say that, you know, this is inspiring and encouraging because, as you guys have shown, you guys turn a passion project into an actual living, and that's what pushed us to do this podcast. And yeah, as a fan, I cannot thank you enough for making that happen for us, and for putting also Canadians in the map. I'm a Mexican, as I introduced myself the first time, Mexican Canadian, but yeah, thank you for putting the international flavor to basketball out there.
Absolutely. Yeah, we you know, we got the Aussie too with Lee Ellis, so yeah. We're all about the international flavor. But that's it. Thank you for the kind words. It's always awesome to hear that. Especially to hear like someone like you that was a fan of the show and then is like, well, if these guys could do it, why couldn't I do it? And that's like, that's absolutely the right attitude to take with this. It's like, if you put the work in and you obviously love it enough, then the truth is anybody can do it, especially today with the technology that we have and the capabilities. So that's great. Thank you so much. And thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it. It sucks that, with what happened over the last couple of days with the coronavirus, and we're not going to have basketball for a month or so, but, maybe we'll have to do this in the future when ball's happening again, somewhere down the line.
Absolutely. And before signing off, just for people that might not be able to know where to find you guys or have been living under a rock, where can they find the No Dunks content?
Yeah, easy. Well, first off, you can find me basically on, you know, Twitter and Instagram and all that at J.E. Skeets. And then the show itself, No Dunks, at No Dunks INC, so at No Dunks Inc. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're now putting the show up onto YouTube. A lot of people like to see it and not just hear it. So if you're one of those people, search No Dunks Inc. on YouTube and you'll be able to find the show. And, you know, I will say, with obviously the NBA suspending play for at least 30 days, probably going to be longer, knock on wood, it's only 30, but we're going to continue doing the show for The Athletic as No Dunks. So, you know, I'm happy to hear you say not only are we informative at times, but we're fun or entertaining. These shows are going to be very fun and entertaining because there's not going to be basketball to talk about. So we're going to get really creative on Monday, we're actually going to do a podcast where we, over the weekend, are going to watch White Man Can't Jump, and then to discuss the movie. So, you know, not an original idea, hey, watch a movie and talk about it, but I think we'll have some fun with it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Just recapping that. So we're going to have like this idea where we'll do movies. We're going to have other squad episodes, those drafting episodes. We're going to go beach stepping. We might even start a Survivor podcast because a few of us are diehard Survivor. Like, we're just going to get really creative, try and get something out there at least once a day for fans to have something to listen to, because there's not going to be obviously a lot of sports to watch over the next little bit. So, yeah, check us out. At No Dunks Inc. Is the easiest way to find us.
I cannot wait to listen to all of those episodes and to get more into Survivor, because I've been...
There you go. Now is the perfect time.
Yeah, now we have time in our hands.
That's right.
Skeets, thank you so much again. On behalf of the Dropping Dimes crew, this is Rob signing off. Peace out.